This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the December 13th edition of Invest Talk, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. We're here to help, no matter what your experience level is, doesn't matter. We'll answer your questions and hopefully share some ideas, good ideas, hopefully, during the hour. So I'm open to any money questions you have. 888-99-CHART is how you can reach me. It's our 24-hour listener line. It's always open and always on. And we're going to check in with some listeners in just a minute. Yesterday, Justin devoted most of the hour to exploring the world of bitcoins because it's on everybody's lips about cryptocurrencies. Now, who would have imagined a year ago that we'd be talking about cryptocurrencies? It's a hot topic, very hot. So the Bitcoin phenomena, if you want to ask any questions, just send a note to Justin. He'll be happy to answer them. And all you have to do is go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Justin. So really, Bitcoins weren't taken very seriously when they came out in 2009. But here we are 8 years later, and everybody's talking about Bitcoins. A Boston Globe article has the value of a Bitcoin this month at $15,999. $15,992. So that is 45 times higher than it was in October 2014. 45 times higher. That was 3 years ago. Is that a bubble? Is it the Bitcoin bubble? Could it grow more? Certainly could. Is it a fad? Is it a bubble like we've had in history, like the tulip mania? Do you remember the tulip mania? Well, you don't remember, but you might remember reading about it. It happened in the 1600s. And this is where a tulip bulb, was getting more and more and more expensive. And it got more expensive than gold, a bulb, one bulb. So if you ever want to read about it, you can just go to the internet and type in tulip mania, and you'll see. But it gets ridiculous because one buyer would be selling to another buyer. No one even had a clue or cared how much it was worth. All they knew is that price was going up. Is that happening with Bitcoins? No one cares about what it's really worth, but everybody's driving at the price. This is going to be an interesting phenomena. So what's going to happen next? And I don't know. There's no answer here. I don't have the answer. I do think it's ridiculous. I think cryptocurrencies are here to stay. I don't think they're going away. But you don't go up 45 times in 3 years. And what are you basing that value on? Based on what? Don't know. Okay, so let's switch out of that. You drive the conversation, not me. Your questions are the ones to take us wherever you want to take us. So I try to answer them live during this hour, 45 Pacific time, or you can leave your questions on our 24-hour listen line, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve, just giving you a quick phone call. I have to ask what your thoughts are on this entire cryptocurrency craze that seems to be going on. I've never been one to invest in those types of things, but the recent surge is starting to become a little hard to ignore. Thanks so much. Love the show.
That's funny. I'm staying away from it. I just don't have any clue how it's valued. I'm not smart enough to figure out what is a Bitcoin worth. How much money should we? I mean, I guess you can buy it and try to just hope for the wave, ride the wave, and then sell it before everybody else dumps it. But there's going to be a hard fall on this at some point. But again, no one really knows where that's going to be. I can tell you this, bubbles build when the people don't think they're a bubble. And if people don't think the Bitcoin price is a bubble, I mean, there was a survey done and said that most people think Bitcoin will go up just as fast in the next 3 years as it did in the last 3 years. That's hard to imagine. 45 times? So instead of 16,000, next year it'll be what? If it was 45 times in 3 years, so that's, I just hard for me to imagine 14 times in a year. So it's going to go from 16,000, 32,000, 64,000, 124,000, and then about $250,000 this year per Bitcoin. Uh-huh. Okay, that's hard to believe. Anyways, don't know. We'll see. I think, as I said, I think they're here to stay. I think it's going to be around. I just don't know how to evaluate it. And I would stay away from it. As an investor, I'd stay away from it. Let's look at our list of topics today. We're going to look at a common misconceptions about home ownership, retirement, investing, credit cards, Social Security. Five big money myths that are busted. We'll see if we can get to all of them, or some of them at least. Also, I have some other things I want to talk about. How about small business sentiment in November? Second highest reading on record. I want to talk about why is small business so excited? Why is our drivers of the economy, small business is a big driver of economy, so upbeat about the economy? What made that happen? And how about a major shift in computer chips, which will probably leave Intel in the dust if they don't get on board? Major shift. Of course, we might touch base with the Federal Reserve and what they did. They raised rates today. We'll talk about that. And what happens with what's going to happen with junk bonds with this new tax plan? There's going to be unintended consequences from this tax cut if it gets passed. And junk bonds might be one who will suffer. So those are things I want to talk about if we can get to them. The Dow is up 81, the Nasdaq up 13, and the S&P down 1. So the broader market was down. The narrow market was up. So that, I thought, was kind of interesting. We'll see how that plays out over the next few weeks, coming toward the end of the year. I mean, we're almost halfway through December. So that's going to be, next few weeks are going to be interesting. This is InvestTalk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. I welcome your money questions. Should you draw down savings or investments to prepay your mortgage? Should you pay that off faster? What are your options for your old 401k, 403b plans when you start working at a new firm? Do you got questions? We'll try to answer them. To reach me right now, call 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, I love the show. This is John calling from Redwood City. I just had a question regarding a Bitcoin investment trust. It's an ETF. The ticker symbol is GBTC. And I have a question regarding Monday's potential impact on futures trading being added effective this coming Monday morning. Can I assume with a stock like this, with a huge run-up, or an ETF like this with a huge run-up, that when they add futures on Monday, is it almost assuredly going to be something that drives the stock price down, or is that not necessarily the case? Hey, thanks a lot. I look forward to hearing your response on the air.
No, yeah, you cannot know if it's going to drive it down or up just because you have futures trading on it. It'll be interesting to see which way it goes, but by the fact that everybody wants to talk about Bitcoin, everybody does. I think the end is near. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to disappear or anything like that. No, I'm just saying there's a big, huge run-up. You might have a pretty big correction. I mean, we're talking big correction. You know, 20, 30, 40% before it settles back down. I could see that easily happen. Too many people are too excited about it. Once everybody's in, who's left to get in? Now, Bitcoin Investment Trust, GBTC, is an exchange-traded fund seeking the performance corresponding to the Bitcoin market price. It's selling for $2,335. Okay? This thing didn't exist until September of 2016. And it came out at, I don't know, $70, $80 a share at that time. It's crazy. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. What do you want to talk about? Talk about anything that's on your mind. How about the five most pervasive myths? One of them, I'll start with the fifth one instead of the first one, is that Social Security is going to disappear. Social Security is not going to disappear. It's always going to be there. It is, what it is we know that at some point more money is leaving than coming in. We know that. I think we're already at that point. We know that it's going to run out of money, and we know you're going to have to make some changes to it. But it's not going to disappear. It's not going to go away. It's not like, oh, well, it's bankrupt, we're done. It's not even close to what might happen with Social Security. So don't think in those terms. Another myth. Buying a home is always a good investment. No, it's not. Now, we are biased here in California because it's been such a good investment over the multiple years for quite some time. But there are places in the Midwest and all over the place that prices don't go up. And what about all those people that bought during the bubble, 2007, 2000? There's still tons of people upside down in their property after all these years, still not making any money. So it's not a sure thing. It's not always a good investment. You just got to be smart about where and what you're investing in. So those are just a couple of the myths. Remember, there's five of them on this article. It's an article you can read yourself if you wish. It's on investtalk.com. Just go to our website. There's another myth about stocks. There's a myth you always get what you pay for. That's not true necessarily either. Sometimes you get much less than what you pay for, and sometimes you get more than what you pay for. But you don't always get what you pay for. And that's something that people believe. Just believe. You always get what you pay for. No, not really. Okay, and how about the myth that you have to carry a balance on your credit? You have to have money owed to have a good credit score. No, you don't. Paying off your credit is not a bad thing. You don't have to have loans outstanding on your credit cards. Anyways, those are some of the myths. And if you want to read more about them, you go to, as I said, go to investtalk.com. This is an article from The Motley Fool, which I thought was, pretty interesting. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Again, before the end of the hour, we're going to talk about small business settlement, which I think is pretty interesting. Now, here's an investment term you should know. What is minority interest? Minority interest. A minority interest, which is also referred to as a non-controlling interest, is ownership of less than 50% of a company's equity by an investor or another company. In other words, you own less than 50%. You are a minority owner. Anyone at 51% who owns 51%, he's the majority owner. He makes the decisions. He votes for himself and makes the decisions. Votes himself the president, CEO, he owns a company. He's a majority interest. Minority interest shows up as a non-current liability on the balance sheet, by the way. And it's just something you should understand. I was talking about limited partnerships and the master limited partnerships and what is a general partnership. And if you're a limited partner in a general partnership, what does that mean? We're talking to someone in the office today about that and the risks involved, because there are lots of risks there that you got to be aware of. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. You've heard about different strategies to save interest and pay off your house quicker. Should you change from monthly mortgage payments to bi-weekly mortgage payments? Let's talk about it. Check in now at 888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Fernando in Pittsburgh. How are you doing, Fernando?
I'm doing okay. Thank you, Steve, for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a question regarding KOF. Mm-hmm. That's Coca-Cola in Mexico.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, go ahead. Oh, you want...
I would like to get your intake on that company.
Okay. Okay, this is Coca-Cola FEMSA, everybody. Mexican company engaged in the bottling of Coca-Cola trademark beverage in Mexico, Latin America, Brazil, and Asia. It's a $15 billion company, so it's a big company. It's headquarters in Mexico. It trades as an ADR on RX Stock Exchange. KOF is the symbol. They've turned around their sales recently. I mean, going pretty strong in recent, so they've been able to go from shrinking the cells in the single digits to growing their cells in the double digits. And the P/E ratio is at the low end of its range. It had a little pop up. I think this is where you buy it. I think you go ahead and just buy it here. I think it's a good price. Boy, we got a problem with that. So I would be a buy on KOF. It trades sideways all through November and through most of December and popped up today above all the, you know, several of the moving averages. And it had a big move today, up 3%. So this is where I would buy it. Pays 2.4% dividend, and I would be a buyer of KOF. Thanks, Fernando. Appreciate the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So the question is the small business sentiment in November had its second highest reading on record, okay? And it's 44 years of history of this, by the way. And so you have, and remember, you got to remember small business employ most of the people in the United States, not big business, small businesses do. So why are they so upbeat? Nothing's really changed. We haven't passed a tax reform. We haven't, you know, we don't have, what's going to, what? Why are they so excited? And I want to point out that this is true for a lot of things. It's not what actually is happening. It's what it is, the expectations of what's going to happen that drives things, drives the stock market, drives economy, drives GDP, drives inflation. If you expect inflation to go up, it's going to go up. It's very common that because what you want, and I say you, and meaning everybody, you make it happen. Remember, I've told you many times on charts, reading charts, well, they're going to find support and resistance at these levels because other people have found out that the stock goes up or down at that level, and me just thinking that it's going to do it again, I react to it, and I make it happen. I and all the other people doing the same thing I'm doing. So the small business guy, if he gets excited, he thinks that things are going to get better, they tend to get better because then he does things to, you know, make it happen. Opens up another office, hires another employee. Well, the employee has money and he goes, that employee spends money. And the economy is driven by the flow of that money. All because he expects things to be better, he kind of makes that happen. So I want to, you know, when you read all these stats, you have to also have it in your mind that the future expectations of something tends to drive it to that direction. Now, this is not always true, but it tends to be true. Okay? So that's why small business people are thinking, hey, things are going to get better. We're going to have to pay less taxes. We got a better pass-through in the taxes. That's going to happen. Well, it may not happen, but they expect it to happen. Therefore, they're excited about it. Therefore, they're reacting to it today. So the only thing that might happen is if they don't get it, their expectations could be disappointed. They go the other way, and everything else goes the other way. So let's go to David in Cleveland. How you doing, David?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for the call.
I wanted to ask you about a stock called TSLX, TPG Specialty Lending.
Okay.
You think it's a good value to buy more? I already own a few shares of it.
Okay. And, okay, let's look at it. It's TPG Specialty Lending, a business development company focused on lending to middle market companies across 19 different industries. It's a $1.2 billion company, so it's a small company. Pays a great yield of 7.5%, so you're hoping that that will continue. I noticed there's a lot of buyers between the price of 15 and a lot of insider buyers between $15 and $18, but they haven't had any recent ones in the last 6 months or so. The P/E ratio is 10. It's going to make it's going to make $2.01 this year, then only $1.79 next year. So the PE is going to go up just because the E part is going to go down. I think that it looks like a lot of resistance. I wouldn't buy it here. There's too much resistance around $21 a share. If it breaks above like $21.50 to $22, then you might be able to buy that and ride it further, but it's got a lot of resistance right in here. So I wouldn't buy it just yet. I'd either wait for it to break out. above 21.50 or pull back to like $19.75 to $20 and then buy it there. It doesn't move in a lot price-wise. It's pretty slow. So you're buying this for the dividend. Hopefully they can maintain that. Looks like they have the money to do it. Coming up on the next Invest Talk, Vanguard says they see a 70% chance of correction soon. Okay. 888-99-CHART is our number.
Our podcast continues next. You've probably been hearing a little bit about the fiduciary laws. They've been postponed. That is the expansion of the fiduciary laws. But registered investment advisors are bound by these laws from the Security and Exchange Commission. That hasn't changed. Historically, this has been the code of the registered investment advisor. A fiduciary is required to act in the best interest of their clients. Those not bound by the definition of fiduciary are only required to make decisions for their client that are appropriate, but not necessarily in their very best interest. If you have questions about the role of a fiduciary or a registered investment advisor, you're welcome to click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on investtalk.com. That's InvestTalk with two T's, investtalk.com. Now let's get back to the podcast. This is Invest Talk. No hype, just answers and information. Bring your question to a registered investment advisor right now. Steve is here on our direct line, 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. We're going to talk to BJ, who lives in Fremont. How are you doing, BJ?
I'm doing good, Steve. Always a pleasure to talk to you, and thanks for bringing all the good information to us.
Well, I thank you for the call.
Yeah, so today I'm just I wanted to ask you about Ford Motor Company. Mm-hmm. What do you think its future outlook is? Is this a good price to buy?
Actually, I think
any adversaries or any adverse activity that can impact it.
Okay, it's a car company, and all car companies are severely impacted by the economic cycle. So the thing you would have to look out for, BJ, would be the next recession, because it'll get killed in the next recession, like all car companies and all cyclical stocks. So the best time to buy this kind of company is in the depth of a recession. But that doesn't mean it's not a good buy right now, because it is a pretty good buy. This is Ford Motor Company, everybody. F is the symbol, and I don't need to tell you what they do. They're going to make $1.83 this year. That's 4% more than last year. And then next year, they're only going to make $1.57. So even though sales are growing slowly, remember, you're talking about a $50 billion company. It's big. You don't buy, and they have lots of debt. Every car company has lots of debt. That's always a problem. They pay a 4.8% dividend. So I would say, BJ, that they will always pay the dividend. That's not a problem. They have a very good return on equity of 24%. And they have a very strong cash flow of almost $4 per share. So a price around this, about where it is, between $11 and $12, is where you want to buy Ford Motor Company. It's at $12.63 now. And that's not that expensive. That is really not. A $12.63 is going to make $1.83. Means a PE is down around 8. So, but they usually have a low PE between 5 and 14 for it. But it's still on the lower end of the range. So, BJ, I would not hesitate to tell you to go ahead and pick it up if you wanted to be a buyer of it.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Good to hear.
Yeah. Ford is a core holding, everybody. You buy it, really, you buy it for that dividend, 4.8%. Not going to go anywhere. It's not going to double and triple for you. That would be rare. I mean, the highest it's ever sold at in the last 5 or 6 years has been 18. Low is like $8 or $9 in the last 5 or 6 years. So that, yeah, you know, but you're going to get that 4.8% dividend deal. Let's talk to another question on our 24-hour listener line. 888-99-CHART is the number.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Dave in Pennsylvania. I had a question regarding B&G Foods, Bravo Gulf Sierra. I've been listening to you guys for a couple of years now. I think I've become pretty decent stock picker, but unfortunately I'm a terrible seller. I picked up B&G around 31, little shy of that, and I watched it climb pretty steadily over the last several months. I had probably 10-15% gain at least, and then I'm giving it all back now. It blew through a 200-day moving average, approaching a 50-day. I'm just wondering, if it crosses below this 50-day, should I just cut bait or just hold on to it? I do like the fundamentals of the company. I like the company in general. I'm a little concerned about the debt, but other than that, I love the dividend for it. But this was certainly a growth play for me with the dividend bonus. But just wondering, in this instance, what I should do. I should know better. It hit the 38% on Fibonacci here in the spring last year, and it looks like it dropped, and it looks like it's doing the same thing now. I should have took some profit at 39, but just wondering if I hold on or ride the storm or get out if it drops below this next moving average. Thanks again.
BGS, and I think you just hold it. We're holding it, by the way. We own it in our managed account, so that's what we're going to do. The low has been around $29. It went all the way up to $39. And then in 6 days, it went down to $32, up a little bit to $32.85 today. And it pays a 5.7% dividend. Okay. And it does have, it's growing last quarter it grew 28% sales. The quarter before that, 20%. The quarter before that, 18%. A year ago, they were growing 40-50%. This company is a growth company which has pretty decent values. Okay, it's a $32 stock, going to make $2.23 next year, up 6% from this year. And so that puts the P.E. ratio probably around, 17, somewhere in there. And the five-year range is 16 to 27. Return equity is 21%. And you're right, little red flag is the debt. It has quite a bit of debt, and that's the little red flag about this company. Remember, it's B&G Foods, BGS. It makes shelf-stable food products, jellies, hot sauces, sold everywhere. So I'm kind of thinking that the damage is done. It's just too late now to just ride it through. Ride it through. Let's go to John in San Jose. How you doing, John?
Good. How are you, Mr. Pusney?
I'm good. Thank you for the call.
Yes, I enjoy your show. Learn a lot. Thanks for doing a wonderful show.
Thank you.
A quick question. Today, the Fed increased the rate by 0.25.
Yes.
So I was wondering, are there any ETFs whose dividend actually increase if the interest rates increase?
Yes, there is. Yeah, that's inflation. I was thinking inflation tips, Treasury inflation protected ETF, and if inflation goes up, its dividend yield, the yield from that increases, it readjusts itself every 6 months. But that's inflation.
Right.
That's not in interest rates.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's one out there that does. I don't know if it would be based on the Fed funds rate, which is what we're talking about here, that was raised today, a quarter point.
Yeah.
And that went up to 1.25, everybody, from 1%. The Fed has increased the rate several times this year, and they're going to increase it several times next year, according to them. That's what they said. So you're trying to figure out a way to benefit by the Fed fund rate increase. And I don't know off the top of my head, it's a good question, John, but I don't know off the top of my head that I know that there's an I have the answer for that. I don't remember seeing anything like that.
Right. So, I mean, the secondary effect of it, if you will, eventually the rise in the interest rates will reflect in, let's say, the bonds or utilities going down, or even stocks going down, right?
That's correct.
Then effectively I will have a better yield, but I don't want to wait for that cycle. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, you can if you can short interest rates. I know there's ETFs that go up. Like, let's talk about the bond ETFs. There's a junk bond one called with a symbol JNK, and then there's an overall bond that's BND. And if interest rates rise, those tend to go down in value. So, but that's not necessarily attached to the Fed's funds rate. So the Fed could raise rates, but the overall rates could stay the same. The Fed only controls one rate, and that's the Fed's funds rate. But they've been raising it 3 or 4 times this year, but the other rates didn't go up.
Yeah, the long-term rates are still the same, right?
Yeah. So it's not a, you know, it's not a perfect scenario for you. You've got to find something that works off the Fed funds rate, and I don't know if I know of one. I don't know one. But that was a great question. It really is a good question, John.
Keep looking. Keep looking.
Thanks for the question. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Maybe somebody else out there has an answer. Maybe you can call in. Let us know. Okay, there's a major shift going on in computer chips and the constant changing computer world. And I'm talking about IA, intelligent and in artificial intelligence. And what's happening is there's a lot of that's being more and more. Think about you and talking to your phone or talking to your house, and you have that little box that turns off and on TVs or the heater or whatever. That's all artificial intelligence type things going on there. And the problem is Intel is kind of falling behind. They have great chips. Don't get me wrong, it's a big company. They do have some in the artificial intelligence, but they're not on the leading edge. NVIDIA is probably the number one leading edge. And we're talking about artificial intelligence and connected devices. We're talking about parallel and processing systems and neural networking, all your iPhone, your iPad, your computer, all the phones talking to each other, which is talking to your house and which is talking to whoever. You know, everything's your car. Yeah, so everything is getting interconnected, and those types of chips are not Intel's specialty. And that is the direction that technology is going. So I'm just kind of raising a little flag about Intel. Great company, and they're still not going into business. And you know they'll try to catch up, as they always do. But they're falling behind. They're falling behind on the cutting edge, which is not unusual. So, you know, there's other things happening. And you can see it in your own home. I mean, what's the great gift idea this year for Christmas? You know, artificial intelligence type devices that you tell you walk in a room, you tell the system to turn on the lights and the TV at the same time. And then, you know, lock up afterwards. Lock all the windows. You can just tell it. That's all artificial intelligence kind of thing. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So how should you save for your child's college education? First, you got to decide that you're going to do it, right? Both Series I savings bonds and Section 529 college savings plans offer tax advantage ways to save for college. You got the Coverdell educational investment plan. And what are the merits of all these things? You know, you can under 529, you can prepay tuition. They have a part of their 529, just not investing in stocks and bonds. You can also put money toward a 529 that prepays tuition. It pays it in today's dollars for your kid 18 years from now when he actually goes to college. So you get it a lot cheaper. That's the theory behind it. But of course, they got to go to that specific college. So there's other, you know, and 529 plans are state sponsored. So each state has its own. Not all states have one. Remember, there's going to be some disadvantages, you know. Some of those, there's advantages and disadvantages depending on the state sponsored plan, because states can put limitations on what you can do with the money. So should you do a 529 or a Coverdell? Do you know how much money you can put away for each one of those per year? We can talk about it. Ask your questions anytime. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve. It's Shannon in Palm Beach, Florida. I was calling about Bank of America, symbol BAC. Just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on sort of a long-term outlook for the stock. It's recently a bit, and it looks like it could still be good for long-term. I feel like it's a pretty good price point. I feel like it might be a good place to put some money, and I guess there's some catalysts coming with the whole tax reform and everything. Yeah, just want to get your idea of how much it could maybe grow over the next, I don't know, couple years or so. Thank you.
Well, it's not going to grow fast, and it never will because it's $300 billion in size. BAC is a symbol, Bank of America, global holding company for banking and non-banking financial services in 35 different countries. So we're talking about a huge company here. They're growing 5 to 9% their sales, and earnings this year are going to go up 21%, next year 19%. So that's all good. But it's also already well known, and the stock has reflected that, moving from $22 to $28.84 as of today, since April, that movement. So, you know, a lot of that good news is built in. And they only pay 1.7% dividends. Not like they pay a lot of dividend. They don't. And return on equity is only 7%. Cash flow is strong at $2.32. So it's a good, solid bank. Good, solid bank. And it's not extremely overpriced. I would say it's close to being fairly priced, right where it is. So you could buy it and hold on to it and put it in a drawer, wait 10 years, and you'd probably be very well off. I'm just, you know, the thing that turns me off about it, the one thing that turns me off about Bank of America is the low level of dividend, 1.7%. That's just too low for me. I mean, I have a trouble buying it that low. And I noticed the insiders stopped buying the stock at about $23, $24, you know, which is what it was back May, June. So it's a great company, and I probably, for me, I'd have to pull back pretty hard so I can get a higher dividend yield, and I would be buying it for the dividend, not the growth. Bank of America, everybody, BAC, BAC. So the Federal Reserve raised rates a quarter point. Now remember I said they only control one rate, and that's the Fed's funds rate. That's the rate that they charge banks for borrowing money from them. And it's at up a quarter point to 1.25%. Okay, and that's the fourth time this year that they did that. And Janet Yellen said they're probably going to raise it three times next year. But remember, she's not going to be the chairman next year. She's not going to be there next year. She also said that the market's not overvalued, but necessarily overvalued, but it admits that it's kind of high. But she also says that, you know, we economists, referring to herself, are not very good at telling you where the market's going to go, if it's going to go higher or lower, or picking a price point. They're not good at that, which I thought was interesting. And one other thing, they're still puzzled. They are, meaning the Federal Reserve, puzzled about the low inflation rate. They don't understand why that's happening. It's kind of scary that they don't understand how the rest of us is going to understand if they don't. They're supposed to be the smartest people out there. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley. Only about 10 minutes left. So this is the time to get your question in. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, guys. My name is Benjamin. I live in Orange County, California. Listen to your show. Love it. I have a question about penny stocks. Pretty much, are they worth it? They're pretty stagnant. Some of them move up and down every day at different paces. For example, one of them I have is IC, N as in Nancy, B as in Bravo. I have a lot of shares, but it's not seeming to go anywhere. So if you can answer this question about penny stocks, if they're worth it, where can I get the financials on them? Thanks, guys. Love your show. Bye.
And the simple answer is no. And I would suggest never, ever, ever, ever buy penny stock. Most of them go out of business. Now, what happens is there's that 0.1% that skyrockets and makes you 100,000% gain because they started at, for instance, this one's selling at a fraction of a penny, this ICNB, a fraction of a penny. Well, anybody can move the stock. Well, and there's so much manipulation in this area, so much manipulation, that it's just not worth the effort. Most of them go out of business. You're wasting your effort and time to try to find the one or two little gems out of all the ones that are out there. It's like playing the lottery. You're just not going to make it. Someone wins, but it's not going to be you or me. So, no, I would stay away from penny stocks and just stay away from the whole idea. Let's go to Dave in San Leandro. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm good, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
I know that everybody says you can't time the market.
Right.
But my question is,
is related to that. The recent correction, the 5 to 15% correction that wailed on the tech stocks here 10 days ago or so-ish, and I heard an opinion that this is really the big mutual funds and banks rebalancing their portfolios because the tech stocks have grown in the percentage that they, and they, it was out of proportion. So the opinion is that I heard was that this is them rebalancing and going back to Ford and Bank of America and things like that, like you've been talking to, mm-hmm. and getting out of the things that have grown disproportionately to their wanted profile. What are your feelings on that? And as far as also about the cyclical nature of that, are they doing this every December, basically? Since I heard that opinion, I haven't been able to study the chart.
Actually, it does happen every year that there's distortion in the market. And there was huge distortion in the FANG stocks this year, FAANG, which is Facebook, Apple, what was the other A?
Google. Google, Netflix.
Yeah. So they distorted, because they're so big, they distorted everything, and they were driven up and distorting the market indexes and everything. And yes, huge holders of these things do rebalance this time of year. And so, yes, what they do is they rebalance out of the high flyers, and they go into the value or low flyers. And, of course, that dries up the value stocks and drives down. But, you know, that's called sector rotation, too. Some people would say, well, we're just having sector rotation here. Well, yeah, but what causes sector rotation? Well, rebalancing does cause sector rotation. So, yeah, that had something to do with it, Dave. No one will ever be able to say that is the exact reason why it happened. No one will be able to do that, but it had a big influence. Let's put it that way.
Well, what do you think about the philosophy then on December 1 every year from now on, you dump everything and you or you do what they're doing ahead of, you know, a week or two ahead of what they're doing. Just in other words, get out of whatever's been super hot that year and go over to the value stocks.
So what you're suggesting is a strategy called Dogs of the Dow. Have you ever heard of that strategy?
No, I haven't.
Dogs of the Dow strategy is a very famous strategy where you sell all the high flyers and buy the dogs of the Dow Industrial 30 stocks called Dogs of the Dow. It's okay?
Uh-huh.
You should look that up in Investopedia and it'll describe to you how that strategy works. And that's exactly what you're describing. Okay?
Well, does it work?
It's worked great for many, 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 many years, and then it got too popular, then it stopped working, and then the last few years, it's working great again. Because people,
okay.
As soon as people forget about it, it starts working again. Thanks for the call.
I wish somebody had told me about that.
Go look it up, Dave. You'll see. Thanks for the call. Time to wrap it up, everybody. A reminder, if you have a question you'd like to ask me directly offline, it's easy to get a note to me. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. And I will get back to you, I promise. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Justin Klein and the whole KPP family, thank you for being with us today. And we can do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.